Hi, before we dive right into the episode, I wanted to share something with you. As a certified childbirth educator specializing in plus-size pregnancy for over a decade, I've become really frustrated with how information shared in popular pregnancy apps, websites, or magazines doesn't often align with having a plus-size pregnancy. And I think we can all agree that there's a real lack of visual representation of larger bodies during pregnancy. Well, over the past few months, I've written an evidence-based week-by-week plus-size pregnancy breakdown, and I'm so honored people have donated over 800 pregnancy images for this project. Head on over to plussizebirth.com to sign up for the plus-size pregnancy week-by-week breakdown series. Best of all, it's completely free. All right, let's go to the show. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hello, friends. I am very excited to introduce you today to Angela Grassi. Angela is the founder of PCOS Nutrition Center, a registered dietitian, and internationally known nutrition and health expert on PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Hey, Jen. So happy to be here.
I'm thrilled. Like, I am a big follow of yours on Instagram, but also just totally admire the work that you do and all the incredible resources that you have regarding PCOS on your incredible website, PCOSnutrition.com. But what drew me into you the most beyond, like, we talk about PCOS so much on the show was that you have a health at every size approach to the work that you do, which is so incredibly important. And I'm so thankful. So I'd love for you just to introduce yourself to the listeners and a little bit about your work.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of your work too. So that's why I've been so excited to sit down and talk with you today. I have PCOS. I have known I've had PCOS since my mid-20s. I was diagnosed shortly after I got married, and I just had a hunch that something wasn't right. And I knew my husband and I wanted to have children soon, and PCOS is the most common cause of infertility. And so I wanted to know for sure if I had it, and I wanted to do whatever I could to improve my chances of pregnancy. And that's how I got diagnosed after seeing many different doctors, because PCOS is really overlooked.
Yeah.
And then after I was diagnosed, I would tell other people what I did and that I started to, that I got diagnosed with PCOS. And then I'm starting to see more patients with PCOS. And at that time, I was actually working as a dietitian at an eating disorder treatment facility. So that's my health at every size background.
Wow.
And I just knew, like, people didn't know enough about PCOS, especially healthcare providers and dietitians. And while we do see a lot of people with PCOS that have eating disorders, I just decided to focus my practice more on PCOS specifically.
Wow. And so you've been doing this now, if I'm reading all your information correctly, for 20 years?
Yeah, I became a dietitian in 1999.
Wow.
I'm dating myself here.
No, it's all good. I was telling you before we even started just how much I admire you as someone who also had a, you know, life-changing experience with my pregnancy and not finding the information that I really wanted, and then building, you know, these resources online that weren't available. And I really admire all that you've done to create this space, but also to create a safer space for people that exist in larger bodies to access this information. So why don't you, for anyone who's listening, like, oh, this sounds good, but what's PCOS? Why don't you tell us what PCOS is?
Yeah, so PCOS is polycystic ovary syndrome, and it has always been viewed as a hormonal disorder. So we know that PCOS causes problems with fertility, because a hallmark feature of PCOS is like a hormonal imbalance, having higher levels of testosterone. And I always tell my female patients that all women have testosterone, just like all men have estrogen. Mm-hmm. It's just your ovaries are pumping out more testosterone than you need. And that causes havoc with your other female sex hormones that control your menstrual cycle. So a lot of times women with PCOS, they either don't get their periods for months at a time, maybe years at a time, or they get really heavy periods that are prolonged. And another thing is that PCOS is really kind of an endocrine disorder too, mm-hmm. because there's many metabolic aspects related to PCOS, like insulin resistance is really common. There's a higher conversion to type 2 diabetes, fatty liver, high cholesterol. So all of these can progress. And we used to think that PCOS just existed for people of childbearing ages and that it would just disappear once you hit menopause. And now we know it's really affects people lifelong.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that, you know, very early on in their adolescence, you know, their periods were heavier, they are having cramps or something, or it wasn't regulated. So, you know, they're like, okay, well, we'll just put you on birth control at a very young age, like 12 or 13. And then they're years and years later ready to start a family and they don't have a diagnosis, don't know what's going on, or they were told PCOS very early on and that you'll never be able to become pregnant. And then I hear from people who are like, I got pregnant and I told my, you know, partner we'd never be able to have a child. And this has been very shocking. Like, why is it that there's just not enough information or support or care? Is it because this affects women?
I think that's a big reason, Jen. I think another reason, PCOS, because it is like a hormonal condition. So a lot of like OBGYNs, reproductive medicine deal with it. And then there's this endocrine aspect too, that endocrinology doesn't want to deal with it either. It's like an orphan disorder. No one wants to take responsibility. And because of that, the National Institutes of Health, they hardly give any funding to PCOS, even though it affects at least 1 in 10 women of reproductive age.
1 in 10. Wow.
1 in 10. So it's highly underfunded. So we don't get the money to do studies and there's no grant money for research trials. So we aren't really advancing that much with PCOS treatment. It's really unfortunate. Like, as you mentioned, I've been doing this for 20 years and hasn't changed all that much since I started doing this.
My goodness. Yeah. It seems like when you're young and they're not sure what's happening, they're like, oh, here, just take this pill. Or on the flip side, they look at someone who is a person of size and has their regular periods and just says, oh, you have PCOS. Have a nice day. Like, it's either we're not going to tell you anything or we're just going to give you a diagnosis without any information and go on your merry way. There doesn't seem to be a way to fully walk people through what's happening to them. I mean, thankfully, there's people like you and others who've created tremendous resources and wealth of information online. But as a healthcare system, there's a lot of failing for people in these situations.
I hear it all the time. And yeah, the birth control is just thrown at people. It happened to my sister. You know, we both have PCOS. I didn't find out till later, but because PCOS is such a spectrum, she was just given the pill. You know, you're not getting your periods, take the pill. Here's someone who's like, you know, starting high school because she got her period early like I did. And all these symptoms started, and which is typical in adolescence, but they just hand the birth control pill to you. And it's a Band-Aid because, like you said, then people go off the pill and surprise, they're not getting their periods again. Or they're at a higher risk for diabetes.
Yeah. What are some of the symptoms that people experience with PCOS?
Yeah. So because of the higher testosterone, it can actually cause like acne is a common issue. Extra hair growth, especially in the central part of the body, like your lip area, your chin, between your breasts, around your belly button, inner thighs, it might be a little bit more coarse or more excessive than normal. And for some women, it's just, they spend so many hours a week just managing, like plucking the hair, waxing, shaving, dealing with the acne. And weight gain is a common feature of PCOS.
Yeah.
And that's something that looking back, like around my adolescence, when I first got my period, at 11, I just gained a ton of weight rapidly. And we hear this with some people that that happens too. And that's usually due to the higher insulin levels.
Wow. And then also hair loss, right? Like you have hair on body hair, but then you can lose your actual hair growth.
Exactly. It's like a male pattern baldness around like a receding hairline. Some will actually get bald spots.
Wow. Yeah. I was so thankful when Whitney Way Thor and her show on TLC, My Big Fat Fabulous Life, was just so transparent about her symptoms with PCOS and showing the hair loss and getting extensions. And she's always been so transparent about that. And I think it's helpful when we can see someone else going through something like that and knowing that we aren't alone.
Totally. It's very common. And these symptoms, like, we don't talk about it enough, but it's really, there's so many dermatological symptoms and it really affects your body image and your self-esteem. And of course, you know, you're just being told, just go lose weight and all your problems are going to be solved.
Right. Which even if that was the case, which clearly we know it's not, it is much harder to also lose weight if you have PCOS, correct?
It definitely is.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating because people with PCOS aren't getting the care that they need.
No.
Like, weight loss isn't going to cure PCOS. Weight loss can lead to eating disorders.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's a spectrum. I mean, there's bodies of all different sizes and colors that have PCOS.
Yeah. How is someone with a care provider that knows their stuff and is going to, you know, take time with someone and not just be like, oh, here, got on birth control, or well, you have this and you'll never be able to have a child, which is not the case at all. You have two children. Many people with PCOS have children. But how can someone get accurately diagnosed with PCOS?
Yeah, you're totally right, Jim. Actually, most people with PCOS do get pregnant if they want to.
Wow, that's
great. It might be a little bit harder for some, but it's definitely the advancements now with reproductive medicine and now what we know about PCOS. And you and I can talk about some of those strategies. But to get your question, how do you diagnose PCOS? It's really a diagnosis of exclusion, so ruling out other conditions. But there's an agreed upon criteria that states that someone has PCOS if they have at least two of the following three criteria. So the first is if they don't get their periods or if they get their periods fewer than 8 times in a year. The second is if they have those signs of high testosterone that I was describing, like the hair loss, the extra hair growth, the acne, and or they have blood tests that show that they have elevated testosterone.
Wow.
You don't need to have the blood test to show it. If you have physical signs of it, that is criteria enough.
And then what do they tell people? Like, okay, you have PCOS. Like what? I mean, you have a great knowledge on how people can manage it. And we're going to talk about that in fertility. But what are people normally told in these doctor's office visits if they have two of those three symptoms?
Right. And the third criteria is just if they have a transvaginal ultrasound.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was so excited to dig in more. I apologize.
It's okay. Yeah. The third is if you actually have the presence of what they commonly mistakenly called cysts. They're actually little follicles that surround the ovaries. They're little eggs, follicles that contain the eggs that never really developed. And they just hang around your ovaries. They never got released to be fertilized. So that would be the third criteria.
Wow.
But it just depends on the provider that you see. You know, I would say in general, like, there was a international survey done of like 1500 women with PCOS. And they said 99% were dissatisfied with the care they got at diagnosis.
My intuition, which is why I asked that, because I just always want people listening to know they aren't alone. And I think so many people just get unheard at doctor's office or turned away or like, here's this label, have a nice day. And I just want people to know that they're not alone. And that statistic is like mind boggling to me.
It's not surprising, but a lot of times patients are just told either take the birth control pill or go lose weight. And I mean, how many people in big bodies have gone on diets and want to lose weight, right?
Yeah.
It's not like they're new to diets. They've never heard of that concept before.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they get into that dieting cycle and that up, just keep gaining more and more and more. And so then periods can be irregular and we're not figuring out what's going on, where the underlining could be PCOS, but they aren't getting the support that they need.
Absolutely.
Wow. So what is the support? What have you found in your work, in your personal experience, that really helps to manage PCOS and can allow for fertility?
Yeah. So what we know is lifestyle in general should be the first line treatment for PCOS, whether you're trying just to manage PCOS or if you're trying to get pregnant, or even if you are pregnant. And what we mean by lifestyle changes is good nutrition. Like for PCOS, there is an underlying inflammation and that higher levels of insulin. So just making sure you're including antioxidant-rich foods like fruits and vegetables, whole grains, omega-3 fats can be really helpful for fertility and for pregnancy. Those are like avocados and seeds and nuts, fish, nut butters, you know, all really great foods. And so nutrition is, you know, hands down really helpful. And then we know that exercise, just moving our bodies, can be really helpful for ovulation and for fertility and to really support a healthy pregnancy. Like studies show that even just taking a 10-minute walk after you eat dinner, like that can really bring down glucose and insulin and can help to decrease the risk for gestational diabetes.
Yes. Nutrition and physical activity are so powerful. I personally was diagnosed with a gluten intolerance, and my mom has celiac disease. And I found for someone in a larger body, having to change the way that I had been eating while also, you know, trying to go down the health at every size path and intuitive eating was really, really hard. So can you speak to that of like, how do we approach nutrition in a health at every size way when a lot of the information around eating for PCOS is very enriched in diet culture? Does that make, am I saying that in a way that makes a lot of sense? Like, okay, we know, yes, eat nutritious foods, but not everyone, you know, can go into that without slipping very easily back into disordered eating patterns.
It is really tricky. And I think what's important to know is you can use the health at every size principles and approach to find what's going to work for your body. And that's how I approach it with my individual clients. I wrote a book called The PCOS Workbook, Your Guide to Complete Physical and Emotional Health.
Wonderful. And it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a Hayes-based book and it goes through, there's a whole huge nutrition section of what, you know, different categories are, how they help PCOS, but you have to find what works for you. You know, unfortunately, patients aren't getting the advice and the treatment that they need. So they turn to the internet and there's a lot of false nutrition information out there. And so if, you know, people would say, oh, well, this worked for me. I cut out dairy. And that, you know, people with PCOS shouldn't eat dairy because it worked for, you know, this one person. Then everyone thinks that that's the answer. So there's a lot of myths. And it'd be great if you can work with a Hayes dietitian that knows PCOS because they can help you through it. But taking time and noticing, like, do you have a gluten sensitivity like you do? You know, you have that strong history of celiac disease in your family. For somebody else like me, I tried the gluten-free. It didn't do anything for me.
It's definitely not a diet. I get sick to my stomach. And I was like, oh, when I don't eat this, I don't get sick. Wow, that's how allergies work. But it has been very hard because I have to be restrictive. And it is very hard for someone with a history of dieting and disordered eating to be told, okay, now you really need to look at nutrition in a different light. And it can be kind of like a slippery road and you've got to find great resources, which is why I'm so grateful to have you on the show. But I think it's something that we don't talk about often enough.
Yeah, it's really tricky, but you know, finding what's going to work best to really get your body optimally working is what it comes down to, and being patient with yourself and taking the time to notice what foods help energize you and leave you feeling satisfied and what foods make you feel sick.
Yes. And then once you start to eat in a way that nourishes your body, it's amazing how great it really feels. So there is encouragement. So if someone with PCOS is following all the nutritional guidance, what do we start to see happening?
Yeah, so hopefully they'll have more energy. They can get their cycles more regulated. So testosterone levels can start to come down a little bit. Insulin levels start to come down. And it can help with ovulation, especially if they're trying to get pregnant. And then we also know that sleep is so important for fertility. And there is an alarming statistic. It's like, it is, I don't know the exact number, but it's very high that people with PCOS have been found to have sleep apnea.
Wow.
And if you have sleep apnea, you're not getting the oxygen you need.
Yeah.
And it's more, it's, you know, not necessarily related to weight. It's more so related to the higher testosterone levels. They affect your sleep architecture.
Wow, that's fascinating. So getting a sleep study, if that's something that's concerning too, could be really helpful. One thing that you do a lot of work around and have on your website as well is supplements. And supplements is something that we hear a lot, like, oh, just try this or take that. And I'm like, whoa, like talk to your care provider, you know, do your research. But will you talk a bit about supplements and PCOS and also how that can relate to supporting fertility?
Yeah, I am a big fan of supplements. We do have a whole supplement store at the PCOS Nutrition Center. And I got into them because I found them to be really helpful for my own health. So while, you know, we know that nutrition is huge and exercise is really huge to help with fertility and to help with PCOS management, sometimes you can't get everything you need through food. And sometimes you're deficient in certain nutrients. And I'll tell you about some that can really help with fertility and ovulation.
Yeah.
One is vitamin D. So most people are deficient in vitamin D, especially in the winter months, depending where we live. And the color of our skin, darker skin people have more difficulty getting enough vitamin D because it comes from the sun. So vitamin D is a vitamin, but it's also a hormone. And we know that vitamin D receptors have been found on our eggs.
Wow.
And there's a clear correlation with low vitamin D and poor fertility.
Fascinating. There was a study many years ago that looked at pain tolerance in labor and vitamin D levels. And they found that people who had higher levels of vitamin D didn't ask for as much pain meds. I found that to be really fascinating,
wow.
Like just how much vitamin D can play a role in many different ways.
Yeah, and it's so important for pregnancy too. There's
yes.
studies that show by the end of pregnancy that the mother's levels of vitamin D are depleted.
Mm-hmm. And we do show studies that people of size have lower levels of vitamin D. And I always encourage people to get their levels tested as well, because it is so important.
Yeah. So vitamin D is a big one if you're trying to get pregnant or are pregnant to take. And really, it can help with your immune system and just your energy levels too. So really important to get that checked. And then another supplement that I really love is inositol.
Mm.
Have you heard of that one, Jen?
No.
So inositol is widely found in food. It's almost like a B-like vitamin. It's not exactly a B vitamin, but it's a relative of the B vitamins. And it has been shown to help improve fertility in women with PCOS.
Wow.
And help restore hormone balance. And it's also been shown to help lower insulin resistance and help with gestational diabetes.
Wow. Why aren't we all talking about this?
I know. That's why it's one of my favorites. In fact, the majority of my patients, when they take this, if they aren't getting their period starts to come back within 3 months.
Oh my goodness.
And we sell a product called Ovositol, which is NSF certified in our store. It's a powder. It's a tasteless powder. You can just mix in your water or favorite beverage. And it helps. I mean, what I have found for myself is that it curbs carb cravings, because I didn't mention carbohydrate cravings is a big symptom of having PCOS. I hear it all the time with my patients and something I always experience. Like even after eating breakfast, you'll want to have maybe some sweets or something. And taking this has really curbed my carbohydrate cravings and has helped to lower my diabetes risk.
Wow. Is this something that people would need to talk to their care providers about?
Definitely. With any supplement, you should always talk to your healthcare provider, you know, just to see if anything is contraindicated with any medications that you're taking, in case there's any interactions. But you do not need a prescription for any of these vitamins.
I love that response, because I think so often we read things or we hear things on a podcast and we're like, oh, going to get this immediately and try this. And I'm always like, I hope it works great for you. But like, it's so important to talk to our care providers. But then there's that extra layer, especially for people that exist in larger bodies, of even just finding a care provider that'll listen to them and treat them with compassion and support. So while it is so important to have those conversations, it's also really exciting to know that there are things out there that don't require a prescription that could truly be life-changing for people with PCOS.
Yeah, that's, and inositol is definitely one that is life-changing. And I always recommend that people get a good quality fish oil too, because fish oil has that DHA in it, which is so important for pregnancy and baby's brain development. Fish oil is also great for inflammation and can lower triglycerides.
Yeah, such an important one. We definitely talk about that one. There's another one that you have that I do hear more about in the little, you know, online spheres when we talk about PCOS, but I will pronounce it wrong. It starts with an R.
Resveratrol?
Yes, resveratrol. Yeah. That one.
Yeah, resveratrol is a potent antioxidant, and it's been shown to help improve insulin sensitivity, so it can help lower insulin. And as an antioxidant, it can also help improve egg quality.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a property found in grapes and red wine. So it also has cardiovascular properties too that can help.
That's incredible. Where do you encourage people to start? Like, if they're listening to all of this and they've either suspected that they have PCOS or they've been diagnosed many, many years ago, like, where do people even begin on being proactive with their health and this journey, especially those in their childbearing years who are looking to a future for pregnancy?
Great question, Jen. So I think the first is to know your blood levels.
Ooh.
Know your levels, like get a physical, know if you have high triglycerides, know if you have high cholesterol, how your thyroid's doing. Thyroid can impact fertility. Know your diabetes risks, your vitamin D. And we have a whole chapter in the PCOS workbook that goes through the labs and talks about what's optimal ranges, what to ask your doctor for. In fact, the PCOS workbook is really a great starting point to learning more about PCOS and how to manage it.
Awesome.
But it's really important to know your, you know, what you're up against and what your body is doing, because you can't feel what's going on inside all the time.
Right. Yeah. And just even knowing like what questions to ask can be so empowering, because it can be hard when you have those like 15 minute visits and you're like, ah, but wait, there was something I was supposed to ask.
Yeah. And especially when, like, I just had a patient, we prep for this. She's young. She's 25 and she hasn't been to the doctor in like 2 or 3 years. And her dad has diabetes, and I've been helping her with the PCOS. And we talked about going to this doctor. She knows that the doctor is always on her about her weight, and we expected it. You know, she didn't have another Hayes provider to go to, and we just wanted to get this blood work done. And I just talked to her yesterday. I'm like, how did the appointment go? She's like, oh, well, the first thing she said was, you know, you've gained weight and that you need to lose weight. And we're like, oh my gosh, it's just ridiculous. And then one of the things we planned for is to tell them that, well, you know, I'm working with a dietitian. So, and then she's like, how much weight did you lose? So frustrating, some of these doctors. But, you know, all of these tips I've given so far can really be helpful, even, you know, when we don't look at weight. You know, these are things that we can improve on in our health and our fertility. And just knowing more about PCOS and knowing what's going on with your body is so important. In our blog, we have tons of recipes and nutrition tips on our blog at the PCOS Nutrition Center.
Yes, I love it. And your free guide too. It's like, newsflash, diets don't work for PCOS. That's when I'm like, I need to talk to Angela. Like, I just like love, I mean, I followed you for a long time on Instagram, but when I was spending a lot more time on your website, it made me love you even more because it's so frustrating to just be told continuously, oh, well, just go off and lose weight. You're like, yeah, like that was so easy. Thanks for like, it's just, it's infuriating.
Yeah, story of my life. I experienced it as a large dietitian too. I was told before I was diagnosed with PCOS, watch your diet. That's what's causing all these problems.
Jeez. Now, for what about those of us or the people listening who are like, okay, I know I have PCOS and I am currently actively trying to conceive. You mentioned those great supplements. You mentioned talking to your doctor, focusing on nutrition, finding a form of movement that feels good, and even going for a walk for 10 minutes has such incredible benefits. Are there any other things around people who are actively trying to conceive? Are there any like fertility apps that are inclusive of people with PCOS? That is something that I hear a lot of frustration around, of like trying to track your ovulation, but there's not a lot of support for people who do have irregular menstrual cycles.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And I think by looking at your body and noticing the changes in your body, like when you're ovulating, you might see a spike in your temperature. There's, I like Temp Drop. I'm an affiliate for them. They do have larger armbands that you can purchase. And what's nice is like, if you want to sleep in on the weekend, it's still going to read your temperature. A lot of times you want to take your temperature before you get out of bed around the same time every day.
Yeah.
And like, if you have to run to the bathroom, like you're not going to want to sit there and take your temperature. I know I didn't want to do that. And then you miss your ovulation window. So that's what I like about that. And then just looking at your cervical mucus too,
yeah,
and the changes during your cycle. I mean, when you're ovulating, it's like they can compare it to like an egg white consistency, like stretchy egg whites. You can just like wipe and notice how those secretions are changing. And those are indicators that you're ovulating too. Some people can feel it. Like they'll feel pain when the egg gets released.
Wow. I hear you saying a lot, getting in tune with your body. Do you have advice on, you know, from your background working with people who have experienced a lot of disordered eating, people who don't have that kind of or want to be in tune with their body, on where to even begin that process of really tuning in and nourishing and loving your body when a lot of people have such a history of really not loving their body?
It's so hard. Yeah. And just the process of going through infertility can be really hard on your body,
right,
too, because you're often blaming your body. What's wrong with me? I'm broken. And I think a great starting point is just mindfulness, like practicing mindfulness. Just even it, a lot of people think mindfulness is turning off your mind and just sitting there and meditating, but it's more about being in the present. I mean, there's so much going on in the world right now. We're worried about what's going to happen in the world, and we're thinking about the future, or we're thinking of mistakes or things that went wrong in the past. We're never really in the present. And so taking some time, I love like some of those apps like Headspace or Calm App, mm-hmm, just starting with like a 3-minute like guided meditation to help with, it also helps with stress, but it's a great place to start to connect with your body, and then starting to get into like the intuitive or mindful eating and noticing like when you have breakfast, you know, what satisfies you best? Do you have oatmeal? Do you have a smoothie? Do you have eggs? You know, what breakfast is really satisfying for you? When do you get hungry again next? How are these carbohydrate cravings? You know, a lot of it is caused by insulin, but could it be caused from not getting enough sleep? Could it be caused by extra stress that you're under? Could it be caused because you didn't add any protein or fat to your meal to balance out your blood sugar? So just your body tells you so much.
I love that so much. And I like how you said breakfast, because I'll never forget meeting with a nutritionist and then being like, you don't have to eat, quote, breakfast foods for breakfast. And it was like, poosh,
like my head exploded because, quote, breakfast foods with someone who has a gluten allergy always made breakfast always made me sick. So I'd never eat breakfast. And now I love making these beautiful charcuterie plates. And it's so it's like rethinking nutrition in a way that works for you with beautiful foods that nourish your body and make you feel great. And then it helps you to like tune into your body. And like you said, PCOS and inflammation go hand in hand, and inflammation takes such a toll on us, and we get so lethargic too. And it's amazing when you start to feel and notice these shifts, and that you did it through just listening to your body and tuning into things that made you feel good, not that restrictive behavior.
Absolutely. It's so important. I'm glad you found that charcuterie board works for you in the morning. It's so fun. Yes. I often recommend it for lunches or snacks. I never thought about it for breakfast.
Yeah, it really helps me to fuel my body too and actually eat in the mornings, which has been a process to reintegrate into eating when for so long breakfast would make me sick, so I just wouldn't eat it. So it's been charcuterie plate tip for anyone listening. They're just fun, right? It's a lot of fun and different colors and stuff. So I want to also briefly talk to you about like pregnancy with PCOS. Are there any things that people should be aware of during pregnancy? We've talked about, you know, how reducing our risk for gestational diabetes with nutrition and physical activity is so critically important. Is there anything else there with having PCOS and pregnancy?
Yeah. So the big one is gestational diabetes. Just having the higher insulin might put somebody with PCOS at a higher risk for getting that gestational diabetes. But, you know, we face the same kind of risk factors. Miscarriage, preterm births could be a little bit more prevalent, slightly more prevalent in PCOS.
Yeah, I've definitely read miscarriage with PCOS and that correlation there.
Yeah. So the good news is like, with PCOS, you tend to have a lot of eggs. It's not an issue that you're not producing enough eggs. In fact, you have a lot of them, but they're poor quality because of the hormone imbalance. So that follicle that contains the egg doesn't fully mature and release that egg. And sometimes those eggs just weren't fully developed, so they're not good quality. So spending time just a couple months even to just work on improving the quality of your eggs. And that can be with those supplements we talked about. That could be with nutrition and getting antioxidants in through food and with moving our bodies can really help improve the quality of our eggs. And really all of those strategies and those supplements and those lifestyle changes are great for preventing gestational diabetes too.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. So fascinating to like realize that there are ways that we can improve the quality of our eggs. How about with breastfeeding and chest feeding? I know PCOS can play a role with that as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because there's a little bit of research that shows that some people with PCOS might have more difficulty producing enough milk.
Yeah.
For their babies. In fact, I had no idea about this and I gave birth to my first son and like immediately at a C-section and probably like 2 hours later, this wacky lactation consultant comes charging into my room, hauling this giant breast pump on wheels. And she's like, "You have PCOS. We got to get you pumping."
Oh.
I was like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, people with PCOS might have more difficulty producing enough milk for their babies because of their hormone imbalance. So one way to establish good milk supply at the beginning is after you try nursing, even the baby, you know, isn't getting much out those first couple of days, still start pumping, like to really stimulate the sucking feeling to establish a good milk supply."
I love that tip. That's so good. And I always encourage people as well to connect with an IBCLC, which is the highest level of certification and training for lactation consultants. And we do see lower rates of breastfeeding for people of size 2 long term. But one intervention that has been proven to help with outcomes is continuous support from an IBCLC. So that's definitely an important component here. But I love that tip too of like getting on the pump. And If you're having a hospital birth, those hospital pumps, woo, they are the best. I rented one. You know, you can rent them too and have them at home. They're unlike anything you can buy online. And they do a great job. But the ones that you can get at home too are great. But getting that extra support can be really, can be helpful too. And then obviously the emotional support, that if that journey isn't one that works out for you, that it's not your fault. And none of this is your fault, right? Like none of this should carry that burden. And also, you know, we also should address that getting your partner checked. You know, if you're with a male partner for getting pregnant and looking at their sperm quality. So often we just put everything on the woman. Oh, you're irregular periods. Are you this or your weight? And then I've heard far more stories than I can count of it was never about her, it was also about the partner. So that's important as well.
Absolutely. I know there's so many things that women have to go through, especially being in a fat body, you know?
Yeah. What about postpartum? Did you find, or just, you know, as we're getting older, as we're all getting older in menopause, is there anything that we need to be thinking about with PCOS there as well?
Yeah, so PCOS just doesn't disappear once you give birth. And if anything, we're starting to see more long-term research that follows people up from their childbearing years. And it really shows more metabolic risk factors can increase as you get older. And that's just more of an importance to listen to your body and take care of your body with all of those strategies that I mentioned, like getting sleep, check for sleep apnea, eating balanced meals, food that's going to energize you, and working on including those antioxidants and fiber for cardiovascular health and to lower the risk of diabetes and moving our bodies. Like these are all things that can help to prevent these conditions from even occurring.
Wow. Anything specifically around menopause too?
As far as the nutrition
or
and
just,
stuff?
Just in general about, I'm just curious as we get older and things start to shift and we're not ovulating, like does obviously PCOS still isn't going to go away.
Right. And if anything, they actually see that the testosterone does eventually come down and it reaches like what people without PCOS have, but it takes a little bit longer. So they even think that women with PCOS reach menopause maybe 2 years later because of that.
Wow. Interesting. So you might actually have a longer fertility window. It just might be harder to get pregnant if you're not able to get your cycles regulated.
Yeah. And what else is really crazy though, is because the testosterone levels start to come down, a lot of people who weren't getting their periods before, they can be in their like 30s into their early 40s. Their periods are coming regularly.
Wow. Fascinating.
So they might have a better time in some instances when they're older. We get a lot of surprise pregnancies.
Wow. Well, I want you to say again what you said earlier as we're getting closer to the end. Like you find that most people can get pregnant with PCOS. I heard that, right?
Absolutely. Most people can get pregnant and become parents.
Oh, well, that makes me happy. I think that's a note I want people to hold on to. For you, as someone who has PCOS and who has worked in this field for so, so long, what have been some of those key changing points that you've found? Like, wow, like, I know that I'm not alone, and here's what I want people to know. Like, what is it that you want people to know that are newly facing PCOS or have faced it for years? Like, what gets you up doing this work every single day?
I would like people to know that you can reclaim your life from PCOS.
Wow.
It doesn't have to take control over you. I know it's really scary when you get a diagnosis, and sometimes these doctors are like, oh, you're going to have difficulty getting pregnant, or you're never going to be able to have kids. And it's so wrong and it's so not true. And you just have to learn what's going on with your body. You have to learn about PCOS and learn what's going to get your body working at its best. And that can improve ovulation, that can improve your health and can help you to live a healthy life. And PCOS can just be one part of that. It doesn't have to be everything.
I love it. I love it so much. That is the quote of the show. Angela, tell me about all of your incredible resources. You've mentioned the workbook. We've mentioned supplements, your website, but tell us all about it and where everyone can find you.
Yeah, anyone can go to PCOSnutrition.com. That's the PCOS Nutrition Center, and they can get the workbook. It's also available on Amazon. I have supplements there. And I have a course too. It's called PCOS Complete. And it's a non-diet, health at every size oriented course. I run it with my therapist friend, Dr. Stephanie Matei. We've been practicing together, sharing clients for over 20 years. And Stephanie's daughter has PCOS. And it really talks about body image and stress and mental health. And of course, I go into the nutrition and exercise and understanding PCOS. So it's a good combination and collaboration.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And where are you on Instagram, where I love to hang out with you?
Yeah, my Instagram handle and Twitter are at PCOS Nutrition.
I love
it. Easy to remember.
You are so knowledgeable and generous with the information that you share. And I really hope that people will go follow you at PCOS Nutrition and tap into all of your incredible resources that I will have, and especially that workbook. I want to dig into that workbook over on plusmommy.com in the show notes. And just thank you so, so much for all of your wisdom and for all that the work that you do and for the lives that you impact and having this voice and having especially this health at every size perspective in the PCOS community. I am very, very thankful to know that you are a resource that I can point people to and feel really good about doing that. So thank you so much, Angela, for your work.
Thank you, Jen. Great to talk with you today.
You too. All right, friends, until next time, take care. Bye.
Bye.